about Freemasonry. We don't yet have a text. Would you like to copy this, please? Shimano Genis. Thanks very much. I've asked. There may be a text that he can get out of the bookstore like this. Or he may have to do it by copy, I'm not sure. What's your last paragraph number in the copy? The number given at St. Peter's in Rome, what number has that got? The very, very end.
38.
As a pledge of heavenly gifts, what paragraph is that?
38.
That's 38, okay. Well, then it's the same one. Okay. The same numbering, which is good. We are further down the slide. This is actually on Freemasonry, dates from 1884. We're getting towards we're well into the Victorian age. We're 1884. We're somewhat down from 1832. We are. The 19th century is proceeding apace. Actually, the 1830s were quite a Catholic decade. In England, you had the Oxford movement, which led to the conversion of Newman and Faber, and in France, you had Don Guéranger and other famous Catholics. There was, in reaction against the revolution, there was quite a strong Catholic movement and quite a strong Catholic upswing in the middle of the 1800s. For instance, there was a great missionary effort all over the world, especially in Africa. But French missionaries notably, also Irish missionaries going all over the world. That's when, in the United States, you had a lot of those stone churches being built, especially the later 1880s. Then, of course, the 1930s, and then the stone buildings were still going up in the 1950s. But at the same time, Freemasonry was very hard at work. So that you had this tremendous pushing and pulling of Catholicism and Freemasonry. The Freemasons are powerful at... Freemasonry began in its modern form in 1717 in England, sure enough, and then 1723. I don't know the exact history of those two dates, but those are the two dates. It was sort of launched in 1717 and then confirmed launched or relaunched in 1723. In any case, it began in its modern form in London under the title of Freemasonry. It came out in its modern form under that title in London. And from England, it spread to the continent, and it rapidly spread through France, and then came across the Atlantic to the United States. Freemasonry became very powerful in the United States, and it also became powerful in France, unfortunately, the Grand Orient Freemasonry. There are various, I don't know too much about it, of course, there's the Scottish Rite, and then there's the Grand Orient, and in France, in England and in France, I think there are at least two rites, the York Rite and the Scottish Rite, that fight one another, but basically, you know, they fight Catholicism much more than they fight one another. And they do so in diabolical style. In other words, they're secret societies. They're children of darkness. They work in darkness. And we would know nothing about them if it wasn't that, of course, occasionally somebody converts and then spills the beans and says everything that goes on. Here in the United States, a lot of people think that Freemasonry is innocent, that there's no real problem, because a lot of them are good guys that are sort of Shriners, and they work in the hospitals, and the Freemasons have a great shop window in which they put their best foot forward, and it all seems just philanthropic and so on and so on. And of course they do, the Freemasonry can be divided into the majority of mugs and the minority of villains. I mean, there's a majority of good guys who don't really know what's going on. who are into it because of its business. Of course, if you want to get ahead in business, it's very powerful. It gives you connections. You get the deals and the offers and so on. So a lot of people go into it simply because of business, and they don't really know what it's all about. And Freemasonry is clever enough to have a sort of front of benevolent organization, so that a lot of people really think it is just a good guy's outfit. But the Catholic Church has known from the very beginning it is satanic. It is satanic. And your dear, innocent, sweet guys here, for instance, in the United States, who don't know what it's really about, they really do not know what it's really about. But the Catholic Church, the first condemnation was in 1738. In other words, within about 20 years of Freemasonry starting in England, the crusty old bachelor in Rome had already condemned it. That was Clement the XII. And then from 1738 onwards, regularly, at regular intervals, the Catholic Church condemned it and tried to tell Catholics, look, don't buy into this. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal. But it fronts as being sweet and nice. Don't be deceived. And you'll see paragraph 31. Leo the 13th says, 31, bishops, tear the mask off Freemasonry. FM is Freemasonry, obviously. Tear the mask off. So Freemasonry does proceed in disguise. It advances under a front and behind a front and under a disguise of being sweet and nice guys, and they're nothing of the kind. And Freemasonry is the queen of all of the secret societies. That's what he tells you in paragraph 9. Freemasonry is the center and queen of the secret societies. There are many secret societies, and there are in the United States since the fulminating condemnation of all the encyclicals by popes. This is probably the most famous and the strongest against Freemasonry. But there are many popes that have condemned it. But this is probably the strongest. And from that time on, here in the United States, Freemasonry has had various outriders, like Rotary, Lions, Kiwis, Elks, the Goodfellows, and various other. In other words, in order to suck Catholics into the orbit of Freemasonry, since the Catholics knew that their parish priest told them the Freemasons condemned, well, the Freemasons simply set up dummy operations, subsidiary operations, which weren't condemned. And the Catholic Church in the 1920s, I think, issued a warning, I think, about Rotary in particular. And it's clear that the Catholic Church. But that's the way Freemasonry operates. As you may know, Freemasonry is into the police, into the army. If you want to get anywhere in the army or anything, you have to be a Freemason. General MacArthur entered Freemasonry just before the Second World War, probably because he was told that if he didn't, he would get no command. So he entered Freemasonry just before the Second World War, I think. The police, the military, there's all kinds of things that you just can't get anywhere unless you're a Freemason. They've got a Loctite grip on all kinds of departments. And their power has been building to the point where today they no longer hide. Or they hide, they're coming out into the open, or more into the open than they are. But they are children of darkness. And however much they come out into the open, they will never let people know what they're really about, which is the service of Satan. This the Catholic Church knows, and a whole lot of poor dumb suckers don't know. And the dumb suckers, and the Masons love creating this dumb suckers world. This dumb suckers world, you know, Forrest Gump, and everybody's sweet, everybody's nice, everybody's sentimental, everybody's awash in slush. That is the world that the Freemasons create, in which everybody, that's what they love, because these dumb, stupid people, they can lead by the nose where they like, which is exactly what they're doing today. Catholics know about it, and to the extent the Catholics don't know about it, the Catholics should know about it. I mean, this encyclical ought to be taught steadily and continually so that Catholics are alerted. But of course, with the modern church, with the recent church, you've now got the status of Freemasonry now in the Catholic Church is that is it condemned? Iones. What does Iones mean? Well, it's a mixture of yes and no. Well, then it isn't condemned. No, yes. Well, then it is condemned, Jonas. And it's typical confusion in the modern church. The modern church is trying to run with the hare and hunt with the hounds. It's trying to be nice to the Freemasons at the same time be in line with the old church condemning Freemasons. So you've got this situation whereby canon law didn't condemn it, the new version of canon law condemned it, but at the same time Cardinal Ratzinger put out a declaration accompanying the new code in 1983 that it was really condemned. I mean, who knows? Chaos. Because, of course, the modern church doesn't condemn anybody, which is the great Freemasonic idea. Everybody's sweet and nice, except those who won't step into our system. So everybody's acceptable, except anybody who refuses our system. Well, that's the Catholics, so, you know. Any error is okay, perfectly okay, but not the truth. That's Freemasonry. And they are the great creators of today's world. Look at 19 to 23. Read paragraphs 19 to 23 as a portrait of today's world. Destroying all the foundations of morality in dogma and truth, they unleash a deplorable immorality. By denying original sin and by exaggerating natural goodness, that's Forrest Gump, that's Hollywood. Everybody's sweet, everybody's nice, all you've got to do is just be a little bit nicer and then everybody will turn nice. That's Freemasonry, that's Hollywood. They craftily promote licentiousness. Now there's complete absence of any controls or laws or commandments. By laicizing marriage, 21, I was saying to you that Gregory attacked the attack on marriage. Gregory defended Catholic marriage, and I said to you that many other popes defend marriage. Here again, the Masons laicize marriage. In other words, they stop it being a sacrament. They make it a purely lay contract. By doing so, they dissolve the family. The Freemasons break up the family. And by laicizing education, it's all going to be state schools. They demoralize the young. As you may know, it's now forbidden for teachers to even mention in public schools the name of God. And not only may the teachers not name God, but somebody told me, I think it was in Cincinnati, that not even the janitors in a public school are allowed to name God. Because a janitor, you know, one of our people in one of our chapels was a janitor in a public school, and he began talking to the kids about God. He was brought in front of the headmaster, the principal, and told he may not, on the school premises, mention the name G-O-D. So that's the laicizing of education. They demoralize the young. The Freemasons are destroying the morality of the young. You may recognize that that's exactly what's happening today. In politics, they promote liberty, equality, fraternity, libertarianism, egalitarianism, democratism, and the godless state. The state is going to have nothing to do with God. That's again today. And by all of these things, the Freemasons are paving the way for the total destruction of rank and property, in other words, communism. I said to you, Freemasonry leads directly to communism. And because they both rest upon the fight against God. And they're both the children of Protestantism, which was the beginning of the great modern fight against the real God and his real church. So, if you read nothing else, read 19 to 23 and then think again. This is 1884. This is a pope writing over 100 years ago. Let me see. If these be taken away as the naturalists and Freemasons desire, there will immediately be no knowledge as to what constitutes justice and injustice. If you take away dogma and take away Catholic truth and take away the existence of God and so on, then there's no foundation for justice and injustice or for any morality. And in truth, the teaching of morality, which alone finds favor with the sect of Freemasons, and in which they contend that youth should be instructed, is the morality that they call quote-unquote civil and quote-unquote independent and quote-unquote free. Namely, the morality which does not contain any religious belief. But how insufficient this quote-unquote civil morality is, how lacking in soundness and how easily moved by every impulse of passion, is sufficiently proved by its sad fruits, which have already begun to appear. For wherever by removing Christian education, the sect, meaning Freemasonry, has begun more completely to rule, there goodness and integrative morals have begun quickly to perish, monstrous and shameful opinions have grown up, and the audacity of evil deeds has risen to a high degree. What would he say today? I mean, the school children being taught, positively taught, that homosexuality is just an alternative lifestyle. And the children are now being taught homosexuality and heterosexuality on an equal footing. Absolutely on an equal footing. That's what they're being taught. They're pushing homosexuality as a preferable way.
Right.
Yeah. All of this is commonly complained of and deplored, and not a few of those who by no means wish to do so are compelled by abundant evidence to give not infrequently the same testimony. That's our modern world. Moreover, human nature was stained, 20, by original sin, and is therefore more disposed to vice than to virtue. For a virtuous life, it is absolutely necessary to restrain the disorderly movements of the soul and to make the passions obedient to reason. In this conflict, human things must very often be despised, and the greatest labors and hardships must be undergone in order that reason may always hold its sway. But the naturalists and Freemasons, having no faith in those things which you have learned by the revelation of God, deny that our first parents sinned. And consequently they think that free will is not at all weakened or inclined to evil. That's Hollywood. That's pure Hollywood. Original sin doesn't exist. Everybody is basically nice. Just give them a chance. Be a bit more nice to him and everybody will turn out nice. It's baloney. But it's what everybody today slushily, mushily thinks. On the contrary, exaggerating rather our natural virtue and excellence and placing therein alone the principle and rule of justice, they cannot, the Masons cannot even imagine that there is any need at all of a constant struggle and a perfect steadfastness to overcome the violence and rule of our passions. Therefore we see that men are publicly tempted by the many allurements of pleasure. Publicly tempted by the many allurements of pleasure. It's all this advertising. That there are journals and pamphlets with neither moderation nor shame. Now you have rackfuls of pornography. It's exactly the same problem. The popes are talking about the modern world. Stage plays are remarkable for license. Of course, then it was still the stage. Now it's the cinema. And now you've got nudity just all the time and everywhere. Designs for works of art are shamelessly sought in the laws of a so-called realism. The contrivances of a soft and delicate life are most carefully devised. You've got coming into the seminary day after day after day, one glossy magazine after another, promoting the soft, easy, comfortable, slushy life in one shape or another. All the blandishments of pleasure are diligently sought out by which virtue may be lulled to sleep. Wickedly also, but at the same time quite consistently, do they act who do away with the expectation of the joys of heaven and bring down all happiness to the level of mortality and, as it were, sink it in the earth. Again, that's Hollywood. You get Hollywood films where everything is nice and sweet and God is not even mentioned. There's absolutely no idea of a life after death or of a judgment or of heaven or hell. Of what we have said, the following fact, astonishing not so much in itself as in its open expression, may serve as a confirmation. For since generally no one is accustomed to obey crafty and clever men so submissively as those whose soul is weakened and broken down by the domination of the passions, there have been in the sect of the Freemasons some who have plainly determined and proposed that, artfully and of set purpose, the multitude should be satiated with a boundless license of vice, as, when this had been done, it would easily come under their power and authority for any acts of daring. It's Hollywood. Hollywood and TV. Saturating the people in vice, cable TV and so on and so on. Because once the people are in mortal sin, thick into mortal sin, the Freemasons and enemies of God can lead them where they like. Break down the morality. It's an old recipe. You may remember in the Old Testament, King Balak, there was a king of the pagans who was having to fight the Israelites. And his name was King Balak. And he got hold of the prophet, Balaam, to cast a spell upon the Israelites. And Balaam stood up and was about to say, accursed all you, the Israelites were out there in the plain in front of him. And he's going to say, accursed are all you hosts of Israel. And what came out of his mouth was, blessed are all of you hosts of Israel. So he tried to curse them and it came out as a blessing. So Balak realized, well, that wasn't much good. So then when Balaam was not in his prophetic mode, Balak said, look, what are we going to do about these guys? They're coming across my territory and they're going to murder us all. So Balaam thought for a moment. He said, I know. Rot their morals. Send your loose women in amongst them. Because if they get out of whack with their God, you will easily defeat them. That's diabolically good advice for the purposes of King Balak. And that's what he did. And it partly worked. I mean, the Lord God got angry with the Israelites because they sinned with these strange women. If they'd gone on singing with the strange women, that would have been the end of Israel. And to the communists, it's well known, the communists push vice, they push this rock music, they push pornography, in order to rot the West's morals. Because if once the West's morals are thoroughly rotted, that'll be an end of the West, a Western resistance.
So, okay, communism is the goal to enslave us all under communism.
No, communism is not the final goal. The final goal is slavery under the Antichrist. Communism is actually just another staging post on the way. And the proof is the breakdown of communism in the East. I mean, the media are now all telling us that communism is over. Russia has converted to McDonald's and hamburgers and, you know, all of these wonderful things. They've now got democracy in Russia and so on and so on, so that the danger is over. Communism is one pincer of the crab. And capitalism is actually the other pincer of the crab. And communism and capitalism both corrupt. So whether you're caught by left-wing corruption or right-wing corruption, the point is to corrupt you and get you away from Catholicism. So the question is, who is the crab that operates communism and operates capitalism and then closes or opens the pincer in order to go from between one from the other, like a ping-pong ball, from one pincer to the other? Russia, of course, has just gone from quote-unquote communism to quote-unquote capitalism. But it's exactly the same corruption. And actually, the Russians are in many ways more corrupt. The Eastern countries, the corruption, has advanced much more since the fall of the Iron Curtain than before the Iron Curtain, than while the Iron Curtain was still there.
But China is still there. China is still communist.
China is still communist, yes. But if the powers that be that operate the pincers thought that communism was still keeping the Chinese too moral and too strict and too anti-divorce and so on, then they would, the powers that be would drop communism in China and they would bring in capitalism. And actually, I mean, a lot of capitalism is capitalism as well being introduced into China. It's the same thing. That's a very important point to realize, that the same power manipulates both capitalism and communism. While communism is more obviously and openly anti-Catholic than capitalism is, nevertheless, they're two pincers of the same crab. There's a lot of evidence of that. There's any amount of evidence for that. For instance, there was an American communist in the time of the Second World War who was taking her instructions from Moscow. Then when the war was declared and sort of communications were cut off with Moscow, she went to her superior and said, well, now what am I going to do? Because I'm not going to be able to get through to Moscow. She was told, contact so-and-so on 44th Street or whatever it was in New York City, and they'll serve the same purpose. There's absolutely no question, you know, there's any amount of evidence that...
But President Obama always ate dinner with Rockefeller. He would come to New York.
Yes, yes.
They say that Rockefeller had an office in Moscow.
It's, you know, you just scratch the surface. There are plenty of good books about it. Scratch the surface and it's very, very clear that they are two pincers of the same crab. An opposition between capitalism and communism is a dummy opposition. Just like opposition between Dole and Clinton is a completely dummy opposition. It's just there for the suckers to think that to make the suckers think that they have a choice. But the real choice was between Dole, Clinton and Buchanan. But as David was saying yesterday, or today, I forget, you know, even Buchanan believes in the system. That's his great weakness. The one weakness of Buchanan is that he believes in the system. And therefore, and probably because he believes in the system, he will probably not run for a third party. The poor guy will probably stay hoping that one day he can get the Republican nomination. No way and never. Because he's not a system man. And although he believes in the system, and although he's going to still apparently honor and respect the system knows that he's not one of theirs, and therefore there's no way he would ever get the nomination. And the Republicans would rather nominate a klutz like Dole than a doleful character, if ever there was one, rather than some character, somebody who's got some character, who can win some votes like Buchanan. But the Republicans don't want that. They're into the system. And Buchanan's great weakness is that he also believes in the system. The system is...
He's too young to be
Governor Wallace said years back, between the Republicans and the Democrats, there's not a dime's worth of difference. It's a famous quote, and it's absolutely true. In England, between socialists and the Conservatives, the same thing. The real clash is always between the Catholics. Between Catholicism and capitalism, or Catholicism and Freemasonry, or Catholicism and communism, that's the real enemy for all of these people. And any clash that they set up amongst themselves is simply a dummy clash to take people's minds away from the real enemy, which for all of them is Catholicism. So, let's have a look at this. You've got an introduction, paragraphs 1 to 8, and then the evil of Freemasonry. You've got those triangular dots, which are an emblem of Freemasonry. Then briefly, 36, the remedy, and a conclusion, which is, let us pray, God, unite our efforts to repel this overwhelming danger, 1884, overwhelming danger. And Freemasonry is now solidly established inside the church. They tell you that there are four lodges inside the Vatican. Yeah.
Do the Masons insinuate themselves into the clergy, or do the clergy join the Masons?
The clergy join the Masons. Well, the Masonry insinuates itself into the clergy by getting leading churchmen to join Freemasonry. And that's why there was a famous list of Freemasons, of high-ranking Freemasons inside the church that was issued at least 10 or 15 years ago, I forget. It was a famous list. Was it? Who did it? Yeah, over 100, well over 100, yes.
I've seen that list.
Yes. But when that sort of thing happens, when somebody spills the beans on Freemasonry, firstly, whoever spills the beans, he'll be found at high tide with his throat slit, and with possibly beside him three pennies laid out in triangular form, like the Jack the Ripper murders, which were Masonic, which were performed by a Freemason. Yep. The Freemasonic doctor, one of the Freemasonic doctors, of Queen Victoria. Because the four women of loose repute were murdered in the East End of London because they were trying to blackmail the Buckingham Palace, because they knew of the grandson, the heir to the throne, the Duke of Cornwall, who's the first son of the Prince of Wales, who's the heir to the throne. The Duke of Cornwall had performed a secret marriage with a girl in the East End. Now, if you go out of Buckingham Palace late at night and fool around in the East End, well, that's a man, and if you sort of go through a marriage ceremony with a girl, well, that's a bit bad. You know, you shouldn't do that, because it may be necessary to bump her off. Sure enough, these other girls that knew her, knew what had happened, tried blackmailing Buckingham Palace. So Buckingham Palace, so the Freemasons, who control the royal family, in order to teach everybody a lesson, just like the killing of Kennedy out in public, to teach everybody a lesson, the physician Sir Thomas Gull, a physician of the Queen, would ride through the East End in his carriage. He would invite these ladies into his carriage, of course, then he would give them some drug, and then he would cut their throats and put them back out on the pavement. The head of Scotland Yard was a Freemason, and as soon as the series of murders stopped, I think he resigned, and there was another head of Scotland Yard. But the cases, Scotland Yard is riddled with Freemasonry. And therefore, whenever they got rid, the dossiers on the first two of the four, I think there were five murders, because they got one of the girls wrong, so they had to murder the next, they had to, one of the first four murders was the wrong girl. So they had to murder a fifth to catch up, to catch the four. The first two murders have got a heavy dossier, but then the others, in other words, the Freemasons called off the hunt, because if the hunt had gone on too much more, they'd have found who it was.
Far be it for me to recommend a movie, but how would they actually give the story, Your Excellency?
Sorry, how do they?
They
find out?
A movie about this.
Yes.
Murder by Decree. It's putatively a Sherlock Holmes movie, but it's the Freemasons being gay, remember?
Yes. It was found out because the story came to light because there was, I think it was a Danish painter who worked in Buckingham Palace. And he knew, and just before he died, he told his son. I think that's how it got out. And then the son told this writer who put it down, put it into a book. But that's the power of the Freemasons. They have immense power. But it's one of their slogans is, they like to be everywhere and to be recognized nowhere. They like just to infiltrate and influence the situation without being recognizable. They much prefer to stay in the dark. They're children of darkness, and they like to stay in darkness. Whereas Catholics, of course, are children of light. So Catholics, the great advantage of Catholicism is that you don't have to hide. You're right out in the open. And sometimes, I'll bet you, the Freemasons envy that. But they are children of darkness, and therefore... You know, it's not certainly everything. The latest novel of Maliki Martin is interesting. It's called Windswept House, and it's very interesting. And he talks. The novel begins Windswept House. Maliki Martin is another interesting question all on his own, but I won't go into that question. But for one good reason, because I don't know all about it. But the novel is interesting. It's there in black and white, and howsoever it be with the Maliki Martin, you can read his novel. And it begins with a satanic rite of the enthronement of Satan performed in a lodge inside the Vatican in 1963. And Maliki Martin in the novel represents that the way in which it was done, since to perform a full-blooded, murderous, sacrilegious rite, actually inside the Vatican would really be a bit strong. What they do is to have a telephone hookup, and then Maliki Martin says that in Carolina, the novel says, that in Carolina, they had the real thing being done, at sort of 9 o'clock in the morning, while it was 4 o'clock in the evening in Rome, whatever it was, the 6 or 7 hour time difference. On the East Coast, 6 hours. And so by television hookup, they had the cardinals gathered in the room in Rome, in the lodge in Rome, not actually performing some human sacrifice or not actually performing the horrors, so that if somebody broke in, I mean, they wouldn't find anything. But the real horrors were by telephone, in coordination, being done in Rome, in Carolina. So that in sync, while the horrors were performed in America, the atmosphere and sort of extension of it was being performed inside Rome, and Satan was enthroned. And Maliki Martin, who knew something about who was working closely inside the Vatican back in the early 1960s, Maliki Martin, I know, says that this enthronement did take place. And in the novel, he shows how it took place. It's very interesting. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I know that Maliki Martin says that it's true. And in this novel, he says that that is the explanation of the paralysis of the Catholic Church, the paralytic state in which the Catholic Church is. The Freemasons are in control, and Satan has been enthroned. And until some pope has the power and the courage to go in and exorcise that, chase the devil out, the devil is sitting inside the Vatican, so to speak, and he's calling the shots. And the large number of the leading churchmen are at the service of Satan through Freemasonry. If you ask, how can possibly a Catholic churchman get into Freemasonry? Again, the novel is very interesting. Very interesting. And what Maliki Martin says in the novel, there are some very interesting pages. And of course, he's clever to put it out as a novel. Because by putting it out as a novel, he stands a much less chance of having his throat slit. He said, this is the truth, and I know it, and here are the documents. The book would be taken off the market, and he'd have his throat slit. Whereas if you say these things without proving them, the Masons say, oh, it's just fiction. It's Malachi, we all know Malachi. So it adds to the confusion without certifying the truth. So that Masons don't mind. Although if Malachi got too close to the bone, you know, who's he? Well, but what he says there is that the churchmen sense that the modern world is slipping away from the church. They sense that the future does not belong. The future does not belong to the good old church. So what must they do? The churchmen are tempted to join what they can't lick. That's the basic temptation. And to join the, Malachi Martin calls it the historical process. In other words, the process of history. In other words, let's jump on the toboggan and slide down with everybody else. And they kid themselves that this process is going to lead to a bright and brave new world. And so that the way in which a Catholic today is really Catholic is not by staying faithful to the fuddy-duddy old crusty dogmas and doctrines. The way in which today a Catholic is going to really help the world is to make sure that the church gets its contribution and wisdom and ancient skills from 2,000 years, that it gets its foot in the door of the brave new world. And therefore, they must join this Masonic process rather than resist it, and therefore they join Masonry. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, indeed. Really, papers it over very thinly who the cardinal of Century City is.
Who is it?
Bernardine.
Bernardine. Oh, Century City. Yeah. I thought it might be Cincinnati. I wouldn't.
The Jesuit and the Jesuit.
Yes.
General, that's
Pelletier. Yeah. Martini. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know all these
right.
people, but I know some of them are so thin. That
yes, that's right. That's it. Malachi Martin presents various characters. For instance, there's a cardinal who's clearly Cardinal Hio. Lefebvre gets mentioned by name, but there are others that he slightly disguises.
How about Father Guttmacher?
That's Father Pulvermacher. There's a connection there with Father Pulvermacher, yes.
Be, you know,
yes. But I mean, you know, it's not identical because...
I thought it was hilarious, the first novel.
Yes. Malachi Martin is brilliant. There's no question about that. And he also does know some very interesting things, and a lot of those things go into this book. And Freemasonry plays a very important part in the book. And it's a very important part of Malachi Martin's explanation of how the church has got into its present mess and where it's going.
How was his book on Keys of This Blood?
I found the Keys of This Blood very confusing. I couldn't make out. I mean, the Keys of This Blood, which was the previous book of Malachi Martin, made out that George Bush and Gorbachev and the Pope were all competing. I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. I think the book was confusing. Why did he write such a confusing book? Who knows? Who knows? The Jesuits was good. Keys of This Blood is confusing. Windswept House is not confusing.
Last Conclave was
good. Could be. So, you know, what game is Malachi Martin playing? At times, you know, you have to ask yourself, maybe he's paid a hostage to the devil. Maybe he has to put out some confusing... Maybe the confusing books save his life. Because if he put out one really traditional book after another, they'd cut his throat. And he would be found with his throat cut from ear to ear, exposed at the high tide, and all according to all of the Masonic ritual of what will happen to those who betray Freemasonry.
Yes. What do you know about the death of John Paul I?
Yes.
He says, I don't want to even discuss the subject because I don't want to get kneecapped.
Yes. So, Malachi Martin does have some contact or other, and he's very clever. And he may be playing a very clever game to let out as much truth as he can let out without having his throat cut. Who knows? Whenever you're dealing with Freemasonry, it's very difficult because I was going to say, when this list of 100 churchmen came out, two things happened. One, I'm told that, you know, within a short space of time, the person who revealed it had his throat cut. Two, the Masons a little later put out another list, which includes a lot of names on the first list, plus a few names of churchmen that everybody knows are not Masons. And that way they confuse the issue. And then which is the genuine list, and how can anybody take any of the lists seriously? They've got so many techniques for confusing the truth. No doubt. I mean, this isn't, you know, in our age, the lies are in control. The CIA lies deliberately and skillfully. They've got techniques for lying and no scruples. KGB, the same thing. The American government, the Soviet government, they're all the English government. The English government is probably one of some of the best lies of all. You know, there's a particular skill in hypocrisy that you find amongst the English.
As long as the Vatican was healthy, he had the power and the means to find out the truth. Now there's nobody anymore.
Yes.
Nobody. What can anybody in a small group? If we're all millionaires,
yes.
We gather 10 million, we start working on it. It's hopeless.
Yes. It's humanly. The Lord God has, humanly speaking, the situation is hopeless. The Lord God has allowed it to get out of control. It's a punishment on the part of the Lord God. And it will come to an end when enough people pray hard enough and enough people want the truth. But a lot of people, of course, a lot of people today don't want the truth. They like their slush and their mush and their lies. The lies are comfortable. The lies are easy. The new religion is a lot easier than the old religion. And it has the advantage of pretending to be Catholicism. So I can fool around with the world and pretend that I'm Catholic. Hey, that's the best combination of all.
And many more people than 20 years ago realize that we are ruled by crooks. And that goes for all over the world. Americans thought, when I came here, if only every country would embrace democracy and capitalism, they would all be rich. Nobody believes that anymore.
Well, a lot of people do still believe a lot of lies, and they enjoy the lies. Why is Clinton so popular in the United States? It must be partly because a whole lot of Americans dream of being like him, of getting away with what he gets away with. He's a hero because he's such a criminal. I'm afraid that's true.
Which reflects on themselves, because then they too are criminals.
Absolutely. The people are corrupt, and the people enjoy having a slick, corrupt president. You can't just blame the politicians, it's the people's fault.
I can understand why the Masons would want to insinuate themselves into the workings of the church, but I don't see what's in it for an archbishop or a cardinal to join the Masons.
Oh, yeah. Well, read again certain pages of Windswept House, and you can see that the way Malachi Martin presents it, if these churchmen want to become Freemasons, it's because they're then the wave of the future. They're on the winning side instead of being on the losing side. See, if you take this old-fashioned view of Catholicism like we're taking looking at these encyclicals, we're absolute losers. We've lost. It's hopeless. The future is dark, humanly speaking, dark, dark, dark. There is no hope, virtually. The Masons have won, the bad guys are in control, and there's no future.
I think the starting point for the downfall of the clergy is homosexuality, which leads to Satanism, which leads to Masonry.
That's not strictly the beginning of it. The beginning of a priest's downfall is the lack of prayer. That's where it really starts. Then he can get into homosexuality, of course, and Malachi Martin has in Windswept House, he represents the American church as being riddled with homosexuality. And but the homosexuality is a punishment from God. And St. Paul says in the first chapter of the Epistle to the Romans that homosexuality is a punishment of idolatry. Very interesting. It's because people break the first commandment that they fall foul big time of the sixth commandment. And I'm sure that's true. It's when you reject God and start worshipping idols that God, St. Paul's expression is he gives them up to their lusts and they fall prey to unnatural desires, men for other men and so on. It's interesting to see. And St. Paul says it three times. If you read the text of that passage in the last part of Romans chapter 1, he says three times it's idolatry that leads to homosexuality. So, it is a fascinating question, and this is the diagnosis back in 1884. Ever since the fall, the introduction, the association of Satan, the warnings of the popes, and the conclusion. Ever since the fall, men on earth have been divided between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of Satan. In other words, there is a clear clash, a clear and head-on clash between Jesus Christ on one side and Satan on the other, which is the mainspring of history. And all of these poor guys who try to explain history as anything other else than Satan against Christ and Christ against Satan are more or less wasting their readers' time. Today, Satan's servants are being more strongly led than ever out in the open by Freemasonry. In such a crisis, the Pope must lay out a battle plan to defend the kingdom of Christ. Previous popes denounced Freemasonry from the moment that it came out into the open. 1738, Benedict XIV in the middle of the 1700s, Pius VII, early 1800s, Leo XII about 1830, Pius VIII, late 1820s, Pius VIII around the same time, Gregor XVI, and Pius IX. They, all of them, one after another, condemned Freemasonry. In many countries, political leaders and even Masons admitted that the denunciations were justified. Alas, Masonry nevertheless advanced rapidly, and it threatens to prove all of the warnings of the popes true. In various encyclicals, I have attacked various errors of the Masons, but let this encyclical attack Masonry itself. Again, interesting to see how he proceeds. He has a brief three paragraphs, well, they're not all that brief, but it's only three paragraphs, on the character of Freemasonry, what kind of people they are. But then notice again, the center of gravity is 12 to 18, where he lays out the principles, the ideas of the Freemasons. We're not attacking the persons. The poor persons are foolish, they're criminal, they've got lusts, but what matters is the ideas. So, the secrecy. Freemasonry is the center and queen of secret societies, binding members to secrecy by fearful oaths. If ever I betray, let me be exposed at high tide with my throat cut from ear to ear, etc., etc., etc. With my hand in my right pocket and a brick in my left pocket. I mean, you know, all kinds of mumbo jumbo. This hallmark of evil, secrecy, is children of darkness that work in the darkness, is confirmed by the wicked aims and the wicked fruits of Freemasonry, which are the overthrow of Christianity. That is the bottom line of Freemasonry. It's designed to overthrow Christianity. And since Christianity means the Catholic Church, then Masonry's primary aim, whether the poor Masons are aware of it or not, Masons' primary aim is the overthrow of the Catholic Church and the introduction of a new world order to replace, absolutely replace, the Catholic world order. And over, you know, the last 700 years, that's how it's been going. And in other words, since the last 700 years of coherent, and since Freemasonry only appeared in the last 300 years, then you may well say, well, then there was something there before Freemasonry came out. Yes, there was. And there are enemies, consistent and steady enemies of our Lord Jesus Christ, right back from the moment he was crucified. And those enemies are the ones that are behind Freemasonry and behind communism and behind capitalism and behind every other anti-Catholic movement that you care to name.
The Rosicrucians were already one world.
Yes, yes.
Did it strike you that the seal of Luther is a cross on the bed of three roses?
It's all tied up. It's all tied up. Freemasonry is simply the modern version of the same old hatred of Catholicism, organized hatred of Catholicism. That's what it is. Not all members, in 11 he says, you know, there may be exceptions, not all members or not all affiliated associations are involved in the full wickedness. But nevertheless, full wickedness remains the essential character of Freemasonry. So that's number 11. So the Pope is very well aware that not all Masons are criminal, that there are some dumb suckers amongst them. And he's also very well aware that not all the Masonic organizations like Rotary and Lions are equally criminal with Freemasonry itself. But the overall overriding and underlying character of the whole shebang is the destruction of the Catholic Church. We then come into the most interesting section of the whole of the encyclical. This is the engine room, once again, where the principles are. The ideas and principles is where the engine room is. It's not a question of love, love, love. It's not even a question of hate, hate, hate. The question whether they're nice guys or nasty guys is not the point. The point is, what are their ideas? Because if you've got the good ideas, you'll be a nice guy. And if you've got lousy ideas, you will finish up by being a nasty guy. It's the ideas that govern whether you're going to be a nice guy or a nasty guy. The evil principles. You've got, first in paragraph 12, the foundation of the evil of Freemasonry. And it's very interesting. And then you've got the escalation of that foundation. 12. The fundamental error of Freemasonry is naturalism. It's funny. It's not going around in carriages murdering poor prostitutes. It's not getting satanic lodges and rituals inside the Vatican. That's not the heart and soul of Freemasonry. The heart and soul of Freemasonry is naturalism. In other words, the denial of any supernatural, meaning Catholic, truth or authority. There's no supernatural truth, there's no supernatural authority. Nature rules. That's the slogan of Freemasonry. And that's Hollywood. Think of, you want a practical application, just think of Hollywood. Whenever Hollywood tries to do the supernatural, it just falls flat on its face. It's got no inkling of the supernatural. But the Hollywood films just swim in naturalism. There's only this life. There's no God of any importance at all. There's no true church except a variety of churches that make different people in different ways feel more or less good on Sunday morning. That's all religion is. And it's all a sham. There's no truth. There's just a clash of opinions. And it's just love, love, love. All that's left is sex. And even that is losing its meaning.
Incredible. That's Protestantism.
Yes, yes, yes. And so Freemasonry descends directly from Protestantism, yes. The connection between Freemasonry and Protestantism is direct. And then Freemasonry and Communism. And so you see it as the three main stages of the great rolling attack upon Catholicism. Protestantism, Freemasonry, and Communism. So, but what's really interesting is 13 to 18. Notice how this principle stacks up. How it escalates. You begin by disregarding the church or neglecting the church. You move on to injuring the church, 14. From there, you move on to positively destroying the church. But don't think that you just stop at destroying the Catholic Church. You then ruin all other religions, positive religions. From having ruined all positive religions like Mohammedanism, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever, you then go on to ruin even natural religion. Even that instinct of God which is implanted in human nature. You ruin that. And the final conclusion, which Leo XIII doesn't lay out in great length, but which is what we see today, is that you ruin natural truth. And that's the bottom line. So you start by disregarding the Catholic Church. But since all truth is a block, it's like a seam. If you undo one stitch and then keep yanking, all of the other stitches will come undone. Truth is like a seam, and you've got to, in order to hold the whole truth, you've got to do up all 20 stitches and lock pretty tight the 20th stitch. Then the whole seam will hold. But if you just let one truth go, all of the others will go. When you're sinking the Titanic, the iceberg doesn't need to bump into the whole of the ship, and it doesn't even need to bump into both sides. Just as long as it bumps into enough compartments, watertight compartments, five were enough, just enough. It bumped into it tore open five watertight compartments, which when they filled, the ship tipped forward, and then the water sloshed into the sixth, and then of course it tipped forward again, sloshed into the seventh, until the thing was finished. And this they knew from very soon after the iceberg hit. And it took about 2 hours to sink. The unsinkable Titanic took 2 hours to sink. A ship is a block, and one hole is enough to sink it. Catholic doctrine is a block, and one error, one truth that you let go is enough to sink it. And so what begins by just disregarding the Catholic Church, like the English do, We disregard. We have our Anglican Church. We believe in God. We believe in Jesus Christ. You undo that stitch, the whole thing will come undone. And the Anglicanism led to Freemasonry in England. That's where Freemasonry got going. Freemasonry seeks to disconnect the state from the Catholic Church. That's the first step, the separation of church and state, in order to discount the influence of the church. Secondly, the church is then positively attacked in her teaching, in her rites, in her clergy, in her possessions, and in her orders. So you move from neglect or disconnection to a positive attack. In particular, Freemasonry aims to destroy the papacy and everything that the papacy has established for the church. So you then go for the jugular, which is the Pope. To ruin Catholicism, Freemasonry promotes religious indifferentism. In other words, it doesn't matter which religion you belong to, which then ruins all other religions. Because, of course, if it doesn't matter what religion you belong to, well, then all of the religions are equally worthless. So that's exactly what most people think today.
It's so hard to talk about it.
Your average person in the street thinks that religion, which it doesn't matter which you belong to, because all it's there for is just to make you feel good. If Protestantism makes you feel good, that's fine. If Mohammedanism makes you feel good, that's just as fine. If Catholicism makes you feel good, okay. And if you like tradition, that's okay. Just so long as you don't pretend that tradition condemns all other kinds of religion. Now, that's not okay. That's Freemasonry. That's religious indifference. It's indifferent. It doesn't matter which religion you belong to. That's pure Freemasonry. And so, to ruin Catholicism, Freemasonry promotes religious indifferentism, which also ruins all other religions. And then headlong, in other words, you go from one area, you crash into the next. Like the water sloshes from one compartment into the next until the Titanic tips up and sinks. It proceeds to undermine the great religious truths which are accessible to natural reason, to all men simply by their human nature, namely the existence of God and the immortality of the soul. Any human being who thinks rightly just by his human nature with his natural reason could get to that. Freemasonry ruins that. And finally, all natural truths, and finally, objectively truth itself fall in ruins. And that's the bottom line. In those diagonal brackets, you've got my little summary there, those diagonal brackets, the diamond brackets, mean it's not in the original text. But if Leo lived today, that's exactly where people's minds are reaching today. There's no such thing as objective truth. And it began with the undermining of the church and the disconnecting from the Catholic Church. That was the top stitch. And there is no objective truth is the first stitch. There's no, and that's what where people's minds are at today. People don't believe in objective truth. We were saying yesterday that words have no meaning. Words have no grip on people's minds any longer. There's no such thing as any objective truth. You might just as well say that 2 and 2 are 5 as say that 2 and 2 are 4. Makes no difference. They're just as true one thing as the other. In fact, 2 and 2 are 5 is more creative. It's more original. It's more fresh. It's more ongoing than saying that 2 and 2 are 4. And to say that 2 and 2 are 5 and 4 is a completeness of truth. I mean, it's all embracing, whereas 2 and 2 and 4 is narrow. I mean, to say that 2 and 2 can only be 4, that's not liberty. I mean, to give 2 and 2 liberty to equal 5 or 15 or 15 million, I mean, that's liberty.